Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week we hear from Michael Smith, author of that new biography on Ernest Shackleton, By Endurance We Conquer. We talk about the remarkable images captured by Australian photographer Frank Hurley. And you can win a copy of the book signed by the author here on Seascapes. We also have copies of the CD Shackleton's Endurance, composed by Brian Hughes, courtesy of Athy Heritage Centre Museum. We've reaction to our story on the graving dock in Dublin Port from Captain Frank Allen in Dundalk. Peter Reason talks to us from Bath about Spindrift, a wilderness pilgrimage at sea aboard his yacht Coral. First on Seascapes to the Volvo Ocean Race. As the Volvo 65s head for Cape Town, we can hear from Justin Slattery aboard Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing's Azam.
I think it was my 16th Equator crossing yesterday, so kind of comes naturally. From the outset and leaving Alicante, it's been a very, very intense race. Not been a lot of sleep the whole way down, as far as the Cape Verdes really, and it wasn't until we got to the... It's not till we got to the Verde Islands till we kind of settled down into a bit of a pattern, and then of course we had the doldrums ahead of us. So really we've had a very, very unsettled trip. Lots of strategy, lots of tactics, and we've managed for the most of the time to come out on top of things, which has been really nice for us as a team. So we're all feeling very, very positive here on board Azam going forward into the Southern Ocean.
Justin Slattery, bowman aboard Azam of Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing, from leg one of the Volvo Ocean Race as they get closer to South Africa. You can check the positions of those participating in this edition of the Volvo Ocean Race on the website www.volvooceanrace.com. Next here on Seascapes to author Michael Smith and his biography of Ernest Shackleton, and our conversation recorded in Waterford Central Library. We talked about the extraordinary voyage of the James Caird and the images taken by Frank Hurley in the Antarctic.
The James Caird, to put into perspective, it still exists, so we can actually see it and describe it fairly accurately. It's actually 22 and a half feet long, and it was a whale boat designed by Frank Worsley, who was the captain of Endurance. The idea was to sail, if you say it quickly, it doesn't sound very much, was to sail 800 miles across the Southern Ocean to South Georgia in an open boat. And the only decking they had, if you can call it decking, was canvas covering. It was an old sail and they stretched it across the top. It wasn't corked properly. They raised the gunwales very slightly. And to cork it, they used a curious mixture of flour. There was an artist on the expedition. They stole his oil paints, and then they found some seal's blood and they put it in a pot and mixed it all together, and they somehow managed to cork this vessel, and then they filled it with a ton of rocks to give it some ballast, and they sailed for 17 days in this boat. I'm not a maritime man, so I may get this all wrong in terms of terminology, but they used a sextant to guide themselves, and if they'd missed South Georgia, which was always a possibility, because it's relatively small, it's only 120 miles long, they'd have gone straight out into the broad expanses of the South Atlantic with no means of tacking back, and they hit it right on the head. They were, give or take, 10 miles was the error, apparently, and they only took 4 sightings in 17 days because the sun wasn't out for too much, as it tends not to be in the Southern Ocean. And it's a quite remarkable piece of navigation. And it's interesting, again, that at one stage when they were really struggling, desperately thirsty, desperately hungry, bitterly cold, their feet would have been white because of standing in freezing water for 17 days. It was Shackleton turned to to Tom Crean and said something along the lines of, it's the old fellas who are the best at this. And it was the older guys, the Toms and the Shackletons, these were the guys who managed to withstand it. And the others, and it's no disrespect to them, but they broke up. And when they reached South Georgia, there was only three men still standing, and that was Crean, Shackleton and the navigator Worsley. So they were quite remarkable characters. And once again, I would make the point that Shackleton chose those men himself. They weren't enforced upon him.
The fact that they got into Stromness, that they were coming from the wrong side. I mean, in Stromness, in a whaling station, you're looking towards the sea. You never expect anything to be coming over the hill. And if they hadn't come over the hill at that precise day, they would have been wiped out because the weather changed within 24 hours.
I think there's absolutely no doubt that Ernest Shackleton was a lucky explorer, if I can call him lucky, in the sense that he... the weather was in their favour on the crossing of South Georgia. There's no doubt about that. And they had other extraordinary bits of luck. When they reached South Georgia, the James Caird, they took them 2 days. They had to stand off the coast of South Georgia because there was a hurricane blowing and they'd have been dashed against the rocks. And so they had to sail up and down the coast for 2 days. When they did eventually land, in landing, they lost the rudder, came off in the landing. And the whaling stations where they were looking to go were on the north side of the island. They'd landed on the south side. They had to go about 150 miles around. Now, there was no way they could pull that boat. They'd lost all their strength. Without a rudder, the boat was useless to them. And so it was all over as far as they were concerned. Whilst they were resting and recuperating, one of the men, who was an Irish lad, Tim McCarthy, from down the road at Cork MacSherry, happened to be walking on the beach and the rudder washed up at his feet. Maybe there is a God. The pictures, certainly, of the Endurance Expedition are, in my view, some of the great bits of photojournalism of the 20th century. There are remarkable pictures. And you may not know this, but they only survived because Frank Hurley, who was an Australian, but with a name like Frank Hurley, my guess is there was a bit of Irish in there somewhere. Frank Hurley was as daft as a brush because he took the pictures on glass plates, as Marcus said, and the plates, very heavy, were in wooden boxes in the hold of the ship. And as the ship was sinking, Hurley needed to rescue his pictures because he was very, very, very particular artist. And so he did what I don't recommend you try at home, is that he went to the edge of the ice and took all his clothes off, and two big lads picked him up by the ankles and put him in head first. And he rummaged around looking for those photographs and pulled them out. And the reason those incredible photographs of Frank Hurley, particularly the image of the ship stuck in the ice, top that photograph of Tom Crean with the pipe, the reason those images have survived is because Frank Hurley was quite clearly as daft as a brush. Although I have to say to you that should you ever get marooned in the Antarctic and you want to rescue your photographs, I recommend you take your clothes off. You can choose who you take your clothes off with, but what Frank Hurley had worked out sensibly enough was that if you go into the ice, you're going to get wet and cold, but if you come out and dry off quickly and then put on warm clothes, it will warm you up much quicker. So there was method in his madness, but please don't try this at home. You know. My publisher, Con Collins, actually replicated part of Shackleton's voyage by crossing South Georgia, across the land. And when he came back, I rang him up and said, you know, how was it for you? What was it like? And he said, my estimation of these men went up 1,000%, because he'd done it and he was fully fed and proper clothing and very experienced man. And I think that I would use that really as a way of explaining what I thought I knew Shackleton until I sat down to write about him. And what I've found is a much more complex character, much more interesting, the flaws and the weaknesses. Like I said, the fact that there are two Shackletons, the one at home and the one at sea, that surprised me. I love the humanity of the man, great sense of humour, a man who would be possibly out of time in these rather austere times that we find ourselves now, but he was a man of astonishing warmth and could quote poetry, as one of his friends said, he could quote poetry by the yard. He was always had a poem for every occasion, and he was... I'm right in saying that he is one of the greatest explorers of all time. And the fact that he's Irish is something you should all be really proud of. And I would say, I'll stop in a second, but I think this is an important point. There is no formal recognition of Ernest Shackleton in Ireland apart from a little plaque on a wall in a house in Dublin 4. And I think that's really bad news. I think you should be celebrating a truly great man. I think it's time you put up a statue, and I'm prepared to make the first donation to the statue fund. But he's a truly great Irishman, and I think he should be recognised as such. And so I do hope that money can be found to erect something in his memory, because he's somebody you should all be proud of.
It seems only fitting, then, Michael, that I might ask you to read a few lines by Robert Service. I think they were soul brothers, actually, Service and Shackleton, without a doubt. And it's the lines, actually, of poetry that finish your wonderful book, Shackleton, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Smith.
Just for a bit of context, I mentioned earlier that Shackleton was a great poetry lover. He wrote poetry and he was forever quoting it, and he's forever associated with Robert Browning and Tennyson and people like that, these great Victorian heroic poets. And I wanted to end the book on a bit of poetry, but I thought I didn't want to go for the obvious. And then I stumbled across this bit by Robert Service, who was another outsider. The establishment didn't like him either. And I hope you think this is appropriate. So, I like it anyway, so just bear with me for a second. And this is how I finished the book. There's a race of men that don't fit in, a race that can't stay still. So they break the hearts of kith and kin, and they roam the world at will. They range the field, and they rove the flood, and they climb the mountain's crest. Theirs is the curse of the gypsy blood, and they don't know how to rest. Thank you.
Michael Smith, author of By Endurance We Conquer, Ernest Shackleton, which was launched last Friday at the 14th Ernest Shackleton Autumn School at Athy Heritage Centre Museum. To win a signed copy of the book and a copy of Shackleton's Endurance CD with music composed by Brian Hughes, our question is to name two of the vessels that Shackleton sailed on to Antarctica. Answers on a postcard to Seascapes, RTE Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork, or you can email us on seascapes@rte.ie. Next, to that story of the graving dock or dry dock in Dublin Port, to which we were alerted by our friends in Arklow Shipping, and this note from Captain Frank Allen of Dundalk Shipping Company. Good evening, Marcus. I'm shocked to hear Dublin Port Company are trying to close our dry dock. I've used this great facility to dock at least 25 ships over the past few years. I had the pleasure of docking the widest ship to use the facility, MV Super Ferry of Swansea Cork Ferries, with a beam of 24 metres, and the dock gate gave a maximum width of 25 metres. My company have already booked to dock our MV Whalen Dispatch in July 2015. Dublin Graving Dock is as important to us in shipping in Ireland as the aircraft maintenance hangar is to Dublin Airport. The Graving Dock is managed by Garrett Masterson, whose father was manager of the dry dock in the 80s. Garrett and his team offer 24-hour, 7-days-a-week call-out to all shipping companies using Dublin Port with their mobile repair team for emergency repairs. We must thank the previous Dublin Port manager, Enda Connellan, who arranged a new management contract after Harris Pie went bust to manage the dry dock into the future. There are 25 highly skilled fitters, shipwrights and engineers employed at the facility, and up to 50 ships per year are dry docked. Best regards, Captain Frank Allen, Dundalk. Peter Reason is a long-time sailor and is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bath. Nowadays, following his retirement, he writes on an ecology in crisis, drawing on his experience at sea. In Spindrift, a wilderness pilgrimage at sea, he takes his yacht Coral from Plymouth across the Celtic Sea. He talked to Seascapes from the BBC studios in Bath.
One of the questions about the whole challenge of creating a sustainable culture in the world is about how we understand the natural world and how we relate to it. So as a sailing person, I thought, well, what I could do maybe is to write a book which is in its own sense an entertaining story, and I hope it is, because it's a sea story and it's some of my memoir about my life. And into this I could bring some of the things I'd been teaching about Gaia theory, about the universe story, about the world as a spiritual entity, if you like, as well as a physical being, and write this in a way that was attractive not just to sailing people, hopefully, but more to everyday folks, in order to get this sense of the wonderful wild planet that we live on. That was what I set out to do. The southwest coast of England, of course, is quite spectacular. Very deep water, very rocky coasts, lots of wonderful harbours to go into. And then across from the Lizard Peninsula, we were very lucky. We had a very big spring tide behind us and not much wind, but we managed to sail out to the Scillies in one hop with the spinnaker flying. And it is quite extraordinary, because you cross from the Scillies, and for a short while there's nothing there, and you think, where are these islands? And then they suddenly, because they're quite low lying, they appear out of the mist. So we stayed there for two nights, I think, to rest, and then we set out for Kinsale, which is about 30 hours, the two of us. We had a really lovely crossing, and again, you suddenly think, well, where is Ireland gone? And then you're so relieved to see the old head of Kinsale, and then into the estuary. It's a wonderful experience.
But you didn't just stop there, and I think one of the lovely things about you describe sailing with your wife, you describe sailing with your sons, and how the whole art of sailing, if you like, if I can use that expression, develops a lot of life skills that anybody who has a contact with the sea acknowledges immediately.
Well, this was how I started sailing, because I wanted to be a good father, if you like, to my teenage sons. So we started to go out together, and we went further and further afield until our last trip with the three of us was to Spain. And part of the wonderful thing about that was learning to grow up together. We learned to sail really together. I learned to trust them. They learned to trust me. We had to look after each other when we were unwell. It was a great way of growing up to be a father. But on this trip, of course, after getting to Kinsale, I set off on my own. And for a man of my age, I'm now 70, single-handed sailing is both a challenge, but it's an absolute delight, because if you're interested in the ecology, there's nobody there to disturb you. And so as you, for example, when I came into Baltimore, there's something after sailing down from Kinsale, there's something absolutely wonderful and quite enthralling about coming into that harbour and seeing this large, calm, welcoming expanse of water. So single-handed sailing is yet another delight, really, for me. The BBC shipping forecast is so formal, but when the Met Office, Irish Met Office, the lady from RTE comes in, it just feels much more homely. It's really interesting. And I have to compliment the Irish shipping forecasts, coastal forecasts. They are really very accurate indeed, and I found that really helpful. I was very blessed with the weather, I can say that, on that trip. But there's no big tidal currents. If you pick your time and you pick your weather windows, it's well. I've actually sailed on the Irish coast several times, initially in a charter boat, but more recently in my own boat, and I've just found it a delight to do. Of course, the Blasket Islands themselves, there's currents around, and I was very pleased that I got there at Neap, so the tides weren't too difficult. But somebody says that the name Blasket in Old Norse means a dangerous place, so I was feeling quite respectful of the Blasket Islands when I went there. Well, on the south coast of Ireland, of course, the bird life is wonderful. Lots of guillemots and razorbills and gannets. I love watching the gannets from a boat, where the way they circle around and then close their wings and dive into the water. It's a wonderful sight. And sometimes, of course, they're diving all around one. Then just off the Mizzen Headland, I had never seen a skua before, and I saw this big brown bird that actually attacked a gull. And they seemed to be tumbling into the water together until something fell. And it was obviously when I looked it up in the book, I learned that skuas attack gulls and make them regurgitate their meal that they'd just eaten. They're kind of parasites in that way. So I was very close to that. It can't have been more than 50 yards away from me to see these two birds struggling together. And then the other wonderful experience was coming back from Blasket Islands. I'd just come back and I was heading south, feeling rather tired, bit cold and wet, and suddenly I realized that there was a dolphin around me, and I stood up to say hello, and then very shortly there must have been 30 of them, and they followed me for an hour or more, and I just allowed the boat to look after itself and stood up on the deck and watched them. It was gorgeous. They were swimming all around the boat. They were babies. They seemed to love swimming alongside a yacht, and that was a thrilling experience. It's strange because it's very easy, to anthropomorphize and see them as versions of, as conscious in where. They're not conscious in the way we are, but they clearly are intelligent beings, and there is some sense of a contact between us. You do feel with the dolphins and some of the whales that you are making some kind of contact. On another trip, the 2 years after the one I wrote about in Spindrift, we had a whale swim underneath the boat and then come up alongside. It was a relatively small whale, and it stayed alongside for quite a long time, and you feel as though it's watching you. And now, whether this is so or not, of course, is difficult to say. But nevertheless, the experience is absolutely delightful. And I think it's very important. This is part of my thesis of my book. It's really important that we begin to see the world not as a set of resources to use in our civilization, because if we go on doing that, we're on a hiding to nothing. We have to see the world as a living place, the earth as a whole. Not as a set of economic resources, but almost as a living being. And this, of course, is what Gaia theory, the idea that the Earth is a self-sustaining and self-regulating system, if you like, That's what Gaia theory teaches us. And that's part of what I tried to write about and explain in my book, that all the physical resources of the physical beings of the land and the living beings, they're all tied together in one great self-sustaining system.
We'll hear more from sailor Peter Reason here on Seascapes next Friday night. Spindrift, A Wilderness Pilgrimage at Sea, is published by Valla Publishing. Next week, in the second lecture of the current series at Pulbeg Yacht and Boat Club, the subject will be Whales and Dolphins of Ireland. That's a public lecture by Paul Kiernan, Irish Whale and Dolphin Group Welfare Officer, and it will take place on Thursday night, the 6th of November at 8 p.m. That's 2000 hours in Pulbeg Yacht and Boat Club in Ringsend in Dublin. Subscription is €5 in aid of the RNLI. Next week, here on Your Maritime Programme Seascapes, Migrants and Shipping and International Maritime Law. Tom Hurley visits the Hook Lighthouse in County Wexford. We hear more from sailor Peter Reason about Spindrift, A Wilderness Pilgrimage at Sea, a new book on RMS Lusitania from History Press Ireland by Michael Martin with the intriguing title It Wasn't and It Didn't. We'll be talking to diver Owen McGarry about the vessel, the RMS Lusitania, and we'll have the details of those winners of By Endurance We Conquer. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.